Recording.
Well, we're holding on page 68 in Brachos, the middle of Os Nun Aleph, the third line of page 68. We're in the middle of telling the story of Chizkiyahu, who was sick, and Hashem sent Yeshaya to be Mevaka Chola. We said that up until then, Chizkiyahu and Yeshaya had never met face to face because each one felt that the other one, that the other one should show him covered and come to him. So Hashem made Chizkiyahu sick and told Yeshaya to visit him. Yeshaya tells him, Ki meisata v'leisichya, you're going to die in this world and in Olam Haba. And Chizkiyahu says, why? And he tells him, because you didn't do Piri V'Rivya. Chizkiyahu says, because I knew that I'm going to have children that are no good nicks. And Yeshaya tells him, Ahadi kavshi d'rachmana l'malach, what are you mixing into Hashem's business? You do what you're told, and the Ebishter will do what he decides. So the Gemara continues, the story continues, Amalei, so Chizkiyahu says to Yeshaya, Hashta havli brata. Okay, so now give me your daughter in marriage. Efshad gormas chosi di dividi doch. That way maybe my schus will combine together with your schus. Benafkiminoi, benindamali, and then good children will come out of us. Maybe this that I saw in Ruach HaKodesh, that I'm going to have bad children, would be if I would marry some other woman. But if I marry your daughter, then maybe not. Amalei, so Yishai tells him, Kran nigzer alecha gzera. The gzera has already been made on you. Now, what gzera? So Marsha says, you could conceivably explain that he means the gzera is that you're going to have bnin delay mali, and therefore, why should I want to give you my daughter? Marsha says, that's not what it means. It means that he's saying the gzera has already been made, that you're going to die. So what are you talking about? Hey, the third and fourth line of page 68. So what are you bothering? You want to make a shidduch with my daughter? You're a dead man anyway. Amalei. So Chizkiyahu answers him, Ben Ometz, Kale Nevu Oschavatse. Finish up your nevuah and get out of here. In other words, I don't accept that what you're saying is correct as a nevuah. Now, why he uses such a strong expression, there's a bunch of different explanations. Among them, he's saying, as long as a nevuah is not publicized, then it can be overturned. If you publicize this nevuah of yours, then it's going to have to come true. So I want you to finish it and get out of here, and don't say it anything further to anybody else. And maybe there's a chance it'll be overturned. And there's a number of other different explanations, including a very interesting one, that what he means is actually he's saying that you cannot really be a true nevuah. In effect, he's telling him you're a false nevuah. In fact, Iyun Yaakov uses that to explain further on in the story. So what happens? So the Gemara doesn't mention the point over here. You have the Psukim tell how later on, after Chizkiyahu davens, that we're going to discuss in the Gemara over here. Afterwards, Hashem sends Yeshaya back with a message that, in fact, Chizkiyahu is going to be cured and he's going to live another 15 years. Now, when Chizkiyahu hears this, he says, Psukim, it mentions in the Psukim, he asked Yeshaya for a sign that this is going to come true. Ma ois, ki yurpa Hashem li ve'el valisi beis Hashem. Why is he asking for an ois? Yeshaya is already a Navi for 70 years. You don't ask an established Navi for an ois. We know it's an Isser, Lois, and Nasser, Hashem, so Iyun Yaakov says, when he said, Kalin of Oskavatse, he's saying, in effect, I don't believe you're a true Navi. So now when Yeshaya comes back with a new Navua, so Chizkiyahu is saying, okay, you're starting all over again. Well, then let's have a sign that you're a true Navi, because that's what we need to ask for a Navi in the first place. Anyway, so he says, so get out of here. Kach mikublani mi beis avi abba. I have the Kabbalah from my ancestor, from David HaMelech. Afilu cherev chadam unachas al tzavar shel adam, that even if a sharp sword is lying on a person's neck, al yimna atzmim and anachamim, he should not hold himself back from asking for rachamim from Hashem, because Hashem can save him even at the last moment. Where did David come across that idea? Rashi brings that you had in David's times, you have the story over there where David took a census of the people, and then a magefa broke out, and the psukim describe how he sees a malach b'chabish luch b'yaday neturiyahu Yerushalayim. You say that half pasuk in the Haggadah, and nevertheless he's still davening to Hashem to be mevatel l'gzera. So we see even though there was a cher of chabe over there. That's part of what Yeshaya meant by Bahadi Kabshid Rahman Allah. What are you mixing in Hashem's secrets? And you're saying I'm not gonna have children because of that, when you don't know whether they're gonna do tshuva or not. Yeah. So he thought a little bit, yeah. Nibavani Dema Nibra in a certain sense, yeah. Anyway, so that's one explanation. The Vilna Gaon actually gives a different explanation. He says the fact is, in that story with the Malach and the plague, you don't find that the Malach's sword is on David's neck. So what's the Cherev Chad Munachas al Tzavarei? Rather, he says it's actually referring to a story with a later one of the Malchei, with another one of the Malchei based David, namely Yehoshaphat. You have the story in Sefer Melachim where Yehoshaphat and Achav have gone to war against Aram. And the Aramim have instructions to only go and try to kill Melech Yisrael. They're to leave Melech Yehuda alone. All of a sudden, they see Yehoshaphat. They think he's Melech Yisrael. They start attacking him. By Yizak Yehoshaphat, Yehoshaphat screamed out, Hashem Azorai, and Hashem helped him, and he was saved from them. So the Medrash says their swords were actually literally on his neck. And at that moment, he screamed out to Hashem, and Hashem saved him, and they realized it's not Melech Yisrael, and we're not going to go kill him. So literally, the Cherev Chada was actually lying on his neck when he cried out to Hashem. So therefore, so he says that. So the Vilna Gaon says that's what Chizkiyahu now, 200 years later, is saying that's Cherev Chada Munachas al Tzavarei Shel Adam. Worth mentioning, by the way, in that connection, you have later examples of that also. You have an example of such a story involving the Chacham Tzvi's father. Now, the Chacham Tzvi, the famous Chacham Tzvi, his father was named Reb Yaakov Zak. This Reb Yaakov lived in Vilna, and he was there when he was there during Zeres Tachvat Tat, and a few years later, actually, when Vilna had its own invasion of the Cossacks and the Tartars and whatever. So they were lining up Jews and then lying them down one after the other and killing them, chopping their heads off. He was now at the front of the line, and the goy is about to chop off his head. Also, all of a sudden, the goy has Rachmanis on him. He says, "Look, you know, you're such a young guy, it's a pity. You pretend. I'm going to bring down the flat of my sword instead of the blade of it on your neck. You'll pretend like you're dead, roll away as if you're dead, and then you'll be able to hide yourself, and eventually you'll be able to get away." Meanwhile, Reb Yaakov's family is with members of his family are watching from a hidden window nearby. They imagined in their panic, they thought that not only was killed, they actually imagined they saw his head roll away. So Reb Yaakov got away. And meanwhile, his wife, meanwhile, had managed to escape the area. She eventually made it to where her grandfather, the famous Reb Heschel, lived. And people came to him with eders that we saw that her husband has been killed by the Tartars over there, and you should be able to remarry. She says, absolutely not. Eventually, her husband turns up alive and then told them the whole story. After that, by the way, the upshot is, Reb Heschel was a famous Rav in that time. Among others, he was the Rebbe of the Shach. He says, after that, he says, in a time like this, I'm not sitting on a beis din anymore to be Matir Agunas. There's too many possibilities of something going wrong like that, where people in their panic think that they saw something and really they didn't. But there's a real example of Cherev Chadim Munachas al Tzavarei Shel Adam where he got away with it. Anyway, so the Gemara continues. Itmar Nami, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar, Da'ami Tavayu. Both Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar say, Afilu Cherev Chadim Munachas al Tzavarei Shel Adam. Again, even if a sharp sword is on a person's neck, Al Yimna Atzmim in a Rachmim, he should not hold himself back from davening for Rachmim. Hashem can still save him in those circumstances. Shenema, and you have a pasuk in Iyov that expresses that idea. Iyov says, Hen Yiktaleni Loi Ayachel. Even if he kills me, I will still hope for him. So Iyov is saying, even if he's killing me, even if Hashem is sending somebody who's putting a sharp sword on my neck, nevertheless, Loi Ayachel, I will still hope for Hashem that he can save me even at the last moment. So Chizkiyahu is saying to Yeshaya, if you're telling me that I'm a goner and there's no hope, that can't possibly be a true nevuah, so get out. Well, the upshot was, L'soif Yohav Lebrate, eventually Yeshaya did make a shidduch, his daughter married Chizkiyahu. Nafik mine Menashe v'Rav Shekei. Eventually, Chizkiyahu and Yeshaya's daughter had two sons, Menashe and Rav Shekei. Now, there is the Rav Shekei in the Psukim that's mentioned as he was one of the high officials of Sancheiriv. He's the one that Sancheiriv sent to terrorize the Jews of Yerushalayim and threaten them and tell them, don't listen to Chizkiyahu, who was trying to tell you to trust in Hashem. Hashem is not going to be able to save you, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, that's not the same Rav Shekei over here, because Chizkiyahu's downfall took place 3 days after Chizkiyahu became sick. Or rather 3 days after Chizkiyahu recovered, actually. 3 days later, he recovered right before Pesach, and 3 days afterwards, Sancheiriv's army was destroyed, and that was the end of Rav Shekei and that whole gang. So obviously what the Gemara means over here is that he had a son who maybe not, when the Gemara is calling him Rav Shekei, doesn't necessarily mean why would Chizkiyahu give him such a name after such a vile Rasha, but Bepashtus, what it means is that he had the same tendencies as that Rav Shekei, and therefore it's nicknaming him, that. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Yoyim achod rachvinu akasve. One day, Chizkiyahu was carrying the two children on his shoulders to bring them to the base medrash. One thing is, a king should not be doing such a thing in public because Melech Shemach al Kvode ain't Kvode Machol. I think Ben Yehoyada says he must have been doing it in private where there's not a problem of his covered, but he wanted to show them how important it is to go learn Torah, that even I, the Kvode of Atzmi, the king, I'm going to carry you on my shoulders. But then one of them, as they were riding on Chizkiyahu's shoulders, said, "Chozi reisha da'aba l'mitzvah de'gildoni." Tati's head is a good place to roast fish. But Pashas Chizkiyahu was bold. You have to remember, when Chizkiyahu became sick, the Pasuk says he was 39. By the time he married Yeshaya's daughter, by the time he had children with her, and by the time now we're talking children are old enough to be going to cheder, he was in his mid-40s. So apparently he was already going bald. So one of them says his head is a good place to roast fish. V'chad omer. And the other one said, Chozi reishit abba l'karuvi ala korbanam abedus b'chavim. The other one says it's a good place to bring a korban to a getchka. So now Chizkiyahu realized, you know what? That premonition, that Ruach HaKodesh that I had, that I'm going to have benin delay mali, I see it's coming true that they're talking like that. V'chavtinu ba'ara. So Chizkiyahu threw them onto the ground. Menashe survived that, being falling onto the ground, but Rav Shekei was killed. One thing is, Ben Yehoyada points out the deeper significance is a fish, you can't eat it raw, but after it's roasted, it's very edible and very delicious. The same way, Menashe had a future going for him. Yes, he started out as a Rosha, and for his first 34 years he was. Then he did Tshuva, as we know the famous story, and the remaining 33 years of his life, he was about Tshuva. Therefore, he's the one, says Ben Yehoyada, who had talked about the fish, symbolizing that eventually he's going to be like a fish, and there's going to be a hope for him. Whereas Rav Shekei, the other son, put it in terms of bringing korbanos for Avodah Zarah, and therefore he was a goner. Korya nafshe, and so Chizkiyahu applied to himself that I see that I produced such bad children. He says on himself, a pasuk from Yeshaya, v'chelai kelav roim, the kelai, which means in the psukim over there, it means the dishonest person or the mean person, whatever. Kelav roim, his kelim are bad. In other words, look at me. I ended up producing bad kelim in the world like that. So the point the pasuk is making is that you have a bad person produces evil in the world. So he's saying that on himself. Look at myself. After all, I thought the combined schus will help. No, it comes out that I had Caleb Roy. He's quoting Yeshaya. Well, Yeshaya was his contemporary. Yeah. But with that said, by the way, he was in Mechotin. Yeah. With that said, well, not as Mechotin, he was a Shver. This is Shver, he married Yeshaya's daughter. Even if it was a later pasuk, there are places, for example, there's a Tosfos in Gittin that mentions, you have the story of Ashmedai over there, and he quotes a pasuk from a much later part of Tanakh, from Hosea. So Tosfos says over there that they knew the content of psukim even before they were actually said by the Navi and written down. So even if Yeshaya lived after Chizkiyahu, it still wouldn't be. Yeah, kila means like a stingy person. Yeah, the mafoshim on the pasuk over there say that it means something like that, a stingy person or a dishonest person or whatever. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, kila and shoya. Yeah. In fact, you have a couple of psukim earlier. It says, there will come a time when people don't find the need to chan for the shoyim anymore. Nobody will call the kilai. Nobody will call the stingy person shoya. Nobody will say on him, look how good you are, how generous you are. People will say it as it is. The Gemara continues in this connection. Amar Rab Nachman or Rab Chanan, afilu ba'al ha-chalomis, omer lo la'odim, l'machah hu-mes. Even if the master of dreams, in other words, a person has a dream where someone comes and tells him in his dream that the next day he's going to die, al yimna atzmim in a Nachman, he still should not hold himself back from davening for Rachmim, Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Ki beroiv chaloimus v'havolim udvorim harbei. There can be a lot of dreams and nonsense in them, and many things, as later on in the Masechta, we're going to have a long sugya on the topic of dreams and what they mean, and we're going to have the point that all dreams have a little bit of shtus in them. Rather fear Hashem. So what does it mean to fear Hashem? It means to daven. So even a person has chaloimus and he's not sure whether what's in them is havolim or not. Let him daven and not think that the dream shows that something is irrevocable. Marsha explained, because later on in the Masechta, when we talk about dreams, we're going to talk about that sometimes you have malachim that come through a malach, and you have dreams that come through a malach, and those have a true content, and then you have malachim that come through a shed, which are stam nonsense. So like this, a person never knows whether his dream came from a shed or from a malach, but even if he has reason to think it might be from a malach, still asel kim yirah, still let him dive into the Eishter. So miyad. So now going back to the story of Chizkiyahu. So now,
does that mean a good dream could come from a shed and vice versa? A bad dream could come from a malach?
It's possible. I mean, the idea is, in other words, that a dream that comes from a shed is a dream of nonsense. Later on, you have in the Masechta, when we talk about in the ninth parak, we're going to talk about dreams. So it mentions over there that, for example, it says when Rava had a good dream, then he would say, on that, that's the pasuk says, "Bachaloi madaber boy." The pasuk says that Hashem speaks to a navi through a dream. So in other words, that this hopefully is that kind of dream.
But if he
have a bad dream, then he would say, "This is chaloi masashav yedaberu." So therefore, yeah. So the story continues. Miyad, so right away, Vayasev Chizkiyahu ponav al akir. The pasuk says Chizkiyahu turned his face to the wall. Vayispal al Hashem, and he davened to Hashem. Now there is a halacha in that, namely we learned earlier in the perek that when a person is davening, he should be in front of the wall. There shouldn't be anything between him and the wall, except we talked about, for example, if there's a piece of furniture that's fixed in place, or if it's a piece of furniture that he needs to daven, for example, a shtender, then that's different. But other than that, you don't want anything between you and the wall. So there is that point. Nevertheless, the Gemara wants to find another meaning in it, says Marashah, because otherwise, why does it need to stress it over here? If that concept applies anytime a person davens, why are we first mentioning it here in connection with Chizkiyahu? So, my kir, so what does that word kir signify? Means he was davening from the walls of his heart, from the depths of his heart. And we find that word kirois used in connection with deep emotions. Shenema, you have the Novi Yumi, he uses the expression when he's backlogging zich about the churban that's going to come. He says, may I echila, my insides, I beg that it shouldn't happen. Kirois libivigoyma, from the walls of my heart, I'm mourning over the churban. So we see that the walls of the heart can be used as an expression when a person is feeling very deep emotion. So that's the kind of thing that Chizkiyahu felt and was davening on that level. Reb Levi Omar al Iske Akir. Reb Levi says that actually, but the word that he turned his face to the Kir means that he was davening in his tefillah. He invoked the concept of Kir, the concept of a wall. He says, "You're going to show them." Umashunamis shalai osel kirachas kana madoch the isha shunamis from after the parshas vayera. She made one kir, one wall, as we're going to talk about later in the Gemara about she and her husband made a set aside a room for Elisha. So they built one small wall, hech yesas bina, and in the schus of that, you revived her son. Avi Abba Shechipa Sahecho Kula Bekesef Ubizahav. So my ancestor Shlomo HaMelech, who plated the whole Hechel with silver and gold, all the walls of the Hechel with silver and gold, Allah has Kama Bekama, how much more so that his schus should help me out. So that's why he mentions Vayasev Ponim Balakir, meaning that he turned his face towards thinking about the wall that the Isha Shunamis and her husband built, and the walls of the Beis Mikdash, and invoking that schus. Hakosev over here brings an interesting point from the Zohar also. We said before that the reason why the Gzeira was on Chizkiyahu is because he hadn't gotten married. So what happens? So now when it says Vayasev, Ponev Alakir, the word Vayasev in Aramaic, the word for getting married is Nosiv, like Nosiv Ipsa. So therefore, it hints at the idea that now he's agreeing that he's going to get married, which all this time he hadn't done. Then he continues in his tefillah. He says, "Zechor no es asher salachti lefanecha be'emes v'leiv shalem." Remember, please, how I walked before you in truth and wholeheartedly. We know that Chizkiyahu, we're going to discuss soon, the tremendous thing that Chizkiyahu did on behalf of Yiddishkeit in Eretz Yisrael. Keep in mind, his father Achaz had been a Rosha and had brought in Avodah Zarah into Eretz Yisrael and even at the parts of the Beis Mikdash. And Chizkiyahu, the first thing he did when he became king is clean all that out. And work on strengthening and reestablishing Torah and mitzvahs by the Jewish people. So now he's invoking that source of his own. And he said, "I did what was good in your eyes." So my vatoiv beinecha asisi. What does he mean by that? What does he mean by that last phrase? It means that, as we learned before, the importance of putting geula next to tefillah. So he was careful to do that in his davening. In fact, Marashah says, you see in the Psukim, you have his Geula from Sancheirev, and right after that, you have his Tila for his illness. So therefore, we see that we see from the way the Pasuk puts those themes together that he did the same thing in his dad. And Marashah explains also, just like we had before in the Gemara, there's no big chiddush in doing that on a daily basis. We do that as a matter of course. But the fact that he did it Kivosikin, and it's very hard to time that exactly, was something that he wanted to invoke as a great schus of his. This is Chizkiyahu saying on himself. The Pnei Yeshua has a very interesting vote on it. He says, when we talked about earlier in the Perek about Smichas Geula L'Tefillah, so there's an idea, Alpi Kabbalah, which is brought in a bunch of places in Chassidus, that Geula represents Yesod, and Tefillah represents Malchus, and therefore Smichas Geula L'Tefillah means that you combine, that you're putting Yesod together with Malchus, by Yigash El of Yehuda, bringing together the levels of Yehuda and Yosef, and that's a tremendous thing. So now, Yesod and Malchus being together is also bringing together Zoh and Malchus, bringing together Zohar and Akeva. So Chizkiyahu is saying, Hashem, you're holding it against me that I didn't get married, that I didn't do period of Rivet. But I did period of Rivet on a Ruchniistic way by doing so much Geula L'Tefillah. So give me credit for that, please.
This Tefillah we're referring to,
he's davening for himself to be healed from his illness, right? No, his two sons weren't born yet. But this is also, at the same time, you also had this intersected with the whole story of Sancheirev. At that point, Sancheirev is still besieging Yerushalayim and threatening to conquer it. But right at this moment, Chizkiyahu was focused. So there were two problems. There's Chizkiyahu himself is sick, and the whole Yerushalayim and the whole Jewish people, or what's left of it after the Golus Aseres HaShvatim, are in danger. But right now, we're focusing on Chizkiyahu's illness, and when he's davening, V'atoy V'enecha Asisi, and so forth, he's focusing on that Hashem should heal him. Because we're skipping ahead. What happened, given that he was concerned that his children are going to end up being no good nicks, then Taka they ended up being. That's what we say. Now, returning to when he was sick and when he davens, and now we're analyzing this tefillah. So that's one. Shasamach Geula L'Tefillah. Reb Levi Omer Shagonaz Sefer Refuos. Reb Levi says the other thing he means by V'atoy Beinecha Asisi, he means that he hid away the Sefer Refuos. What it's Sefer Refuos, so Rashi here, and also in Psachim, we're going to bring now a Braisa, which is also brought in Psachim, that Rashi explains in both places that Sefer Refuos was Poshet, a book that contained all the known cures in the world for all kinds of illnesses, and Chizkiyahu hid it away so that people shouldn't depend on medicine, so people shouldn't depend on medical science and technology, they should know to dab into the Eved Shtev.
One of them had the same thing.
Avraham Avinu had, it says, he had a precious stone that anybody who looked at it was cured. Who wrote the Sefer Refuos? I think there were different opinions. Who wrote it exactly? I think there's one opinion that one of the Shvatim wrote it. I don't remember who it says. Maybe Shlomo HaMelech wrote it. Whatever the case. Anyway, Rashi holds the point is that Chizkiyahu hid it in order that people should dive into the Eibishter. Now, the Rambam, on the other hand, mentions this point in Pirush HaMishnayos to Psachim. Technically, that thing that we're going to quote now about the six things that Chizkiyahu did is not actually a Mishnah. It's actually a Braisa that was in the printed Mishnayos. You'll find it in the printed Mishnayos of Psachim. But the Rambam points out it's not actually a Mishnah. It's actually a Braisa, as the Gemara is going to quote it now. But the Rambam says I'm going to explain it anyway in Pirush HaMishnayos. So he says no. This idea that the Sefer Refuos was partially a book of medicine and Chizkiyahu hid it away so people should have betochen, the Rambam says nothing doing. And in fact, he uses very harsh language on people who believe that. So what's going on in the Olam Emes when the Rambam and Rashi met and they argue about it? I'm sure they found some way. But anyway, he says absolutely not. How could a person ever think such a thing? By that logic, you can't do anything in the world because you should trust the Nevi'ish. By that logic, a doctor shouldn't be able to cure. No, he says the vort is that there's two possibilities. Either the Sefer Refuos included cures that involve different kinds of magic, where you're not allowed to do them, you're not allowed to do kishuf. Now, you're allowed lahovin lahoris, the Gemara tells us. You're allowed to learn how black magic works in order to teach what's allowed and what's not allowed. The Sanhedrin needs to know it in order to judge people who are accused of kishuf or whatever. So that was why the Sefer was originally written for that purpose, that people should be able to learn these things, not to do them in practice. Chizkiyahu saw that in his times, people are starting to use it in practice, therefore he hid it away. Then the Rambam says a second possibility. It could also be, he says, that this Sefer included cures for various kinds of poisons. Now, many times you have the cure for one kind of poison is a small dose of a different kind of poison. There's actually an expression, the poison is in the dose, meaning you have a lot of things where a tiny amount of them can be good for you, but too much of them is not. So you had such things. So you had this book would contain, for example, you should know, here's how you prepare such and such a poison, and you can use it as an antidote for such and such a different poison. For example, a snake bite. Yeah, they give a little bit of the snake venom. Yeah, you have all kinds of examples like that. So now, again, what was happening was people are starting to misuse it. People are starting to use it. You know what? Hey, this gives me a recipe for poison. I'm going to use it in full dosage and use it to off one of my enemies. And therefore, Chizkiyahu hid it away so people don't do that. Those are the Rambam's two explanations of Sefer Refuos. Anyway, so Chizkiyahu was saying, according to Reb Levi, the fact that he hid away that Sefer Refuos, he's asking Hashem to give him credit for that and then the source of that to heal. So now that brings the Gemara, turning up on him. Vav dvorim asa Chizkiyahu HaMelech. There are six unusual things that Chizkiyahu HaMelech did, with things that you can question in halacha whether they're valid or not. Al gimel hoiduloi, al gimel lo hoiduloi. Three of them, the chachamim of his times, agreed that he had done the right thing. The other three, they did not agree that he had done the right thing. They didn't maybe go and protest what he's doing, but they didn't approve of it. Al gimel hoiduloi, the three that they approved of, is gonna Sefer Refuos. Number one, we just said that he hid away the Sefer Refuos. So the Hoiduloi and the Chacham agreed that was a good thing, which Marashah says, by the way, that's why he's using the expression, Batoi Be'inecha Asis. He's saying, if you were to ask people, should we hide away the Sefer Refuos, they might say, no, we want to be able to continue using these cures. But Chizkiyahu is saying, you, Hashem, realize that there's good reason to hide it away, whether because of Rashi's reason or whether because of the Rambam's reason, it's Hatoi Be'inecha, and therefore I'm asking you to credit me for it. So that's number one. He's hid away the Sefer Refuos, and the Chacham of his times agreed that he did the right thing. The second one is Kitas Nechash Anachoshes. He broke up the copper snake. Moshe Rabbeinu and Parshas Chukas made the famous Nechash Anachoshes when the people had complained against the Mon. Hashem set Nechoshim Srofim to bite them, and Moshe davens to Hashem, and Hashem tells Maseh Lechon Nachosh. So they kept that Nachosh, and they kept that Nechash Anachoshes for hundreds of years. In Chizkiyahu's times, there was developing a problem that people are worshipping it as Avodah Zarah. So Chizkiyahu broke it up. And the Chachamim approved of what he did, because yeah, you have to get rid of Avodah Zarah. The Malbim actually has an interesting explanation about it. He says, now the Gemara in Cholin tells us that there were earlier kings of Yehuda who were tzaddikim, who got rid of Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael, Asa and Yehoshaphat, for example. Why didn't they get rid of the Nechash and Nechoshes? So the Gemara says they left Chizkiyah something to be able to distinguish himself with. The question is, what does that mean? They're leaving over blatant Avodah Zarah in order that the descendant should be able to get rid of it. What kind of a svara is that? So the Malbim explains, you actually have a machloikas in the Gemara. If Reuven owns something and Shimon goes and worships it as Avodah Zarah, does it become also or not? You have a machloikas in the Gemara, whether it does or not. So now, Asa and Yehoshaphat may have taken the view, the Nechash and Nechoshes was owned by Moshe Rabbeinu. Hashem tells him, Asay l'cha Zarah. In other words, he has to use it, make it out of his own copper, and it belongs to him and his family. Therefore, they figured if other people are worshiping it, big deal. They can't answer it anyway. Whereas Chizkiyahu held like the other shita that they can answer it, and therefore he cut it out. That's the Makom Yinichul Leisgaderboy, that he came up with a new understanding and halacha that the previous kings hadn't had. Anyway, so the other Chachamim agreed that he had done the right thing. And the third thing is Girir Atzmos Aviv Al Mitzvah Shachavolim. He had his father's bones dragged around on a bed of ropes what happened was, we said Ochaz was a terrible Rasha. So now when Ochaz died, then Chizkiyahu, instead of giving him a nice, honorable state funeral, he had him dragged around Yerushalayim on a bed of ropes. First of all, it would be a kapara for Ochaz, that this way he has this bizoyan, such a bizoyan is done to his body, that would help that he doesn't lose his place in Olam Haba. Second of all, it would also give a message to all the Rishayim, don't think that you can be like Ochaz and get away with it, you won't. And therefore, V'hoidulay and the Chachamim approved of what he did, that it was the right thing. Now, then there were three things that Chizkiyahu did that the Chacham did not approve of. One is he closed up the Gichon spring. Now, Rashi explains that we had in last week's parasha, we have the four rivers that come from Gan Eden, one of which is called Gichon. That's not the one we're talking about over here. That Gichon is nowhere near Eretz Yisrael. There's a spring right outside the city of Yerushalayim called the Gichon spring. So Chizkiyahu closed up the outlet to that. You actually have, it's generally accepted, there's a famous underground tunnel under the old city of Yerushalayim that leads to a spring called the Shiloyach spring. It's generally accepted that Chizkiyahu was the one who had that tunnel built to divert the water. And the Pasuk mentions the reason, because he says if Sancheiriv and his army comes, we don't want them to have a water supply outside of Yerushalayim. So he did that. He closed up the Megichon. V'loy hodu lo, the Chachamim disagreed with him, first of all, because they said he should have had more betochen in Hashem. And also, Maharsha points out, now then the Pasuk over there mentions that he consulted with Sarav v'Giborav, and they closed up the other water springs. Sarav implies the other Chachamim. It doesn't just mean noblemen, it means the Chachamim who he would consult with. So apparently, Maharsha says, as far as the other water sources, they had no problem with that. But the Gichon, particularly, they said he shouldn't. There is an idea about that, because the Gichon spring, particularly, is connected with Malchus Beis David. It says the kings of Malchus Beis David would be anointed by a spring, and specifically by the Gichon spring, as a siman that their Malchus should continue to last for a long time, not the way a spring constantly flows. So therefore, for him to tamper with Mei Gichon is something serious, and therefore the Chacham disapproved of that. There's a famous story in that connection involving Reb Chaim Vital, where one time the Arab governor of Yerushalayim, we're talking in the 1600s, found out about this, and he says to Reb Chaim, he wants him to undo that, to unblock the Gichon and let it flow again like it used to. After all, you know, he says, if your rabbis say that Chizkiyahu shouldn't have done it in the first place, then I, as the governor of Yerushalayim, I want to undo that. So Reb Chaim didn't want to get involved with it. He used the Shem Kodesh to transport himself with Kfitzes HaDerech to someplace else, to Damascus, I think. And that night, the Arizal comes to him in a dream and tells him that actually you would have had a great, you should have done that. And that would have, with that, you would have brought Mashiach closer, and now you missed the opportunity. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Because that's the idea. In other words, the Gichon spring has to do with Malchus Beis David. And for it to be unblocked would mean that now Malchus Beis David could have been brought that much closer.
Where is it?
It's right outside Yerushalayim. Right now it's stopped up. I don't know. I mean, they have archaeological digs all over the place over there, but I don't know. And you know, Lav Dafka, I mean, it has to be an Eis Rotzen, obviously. You can't stam have anybody is in, you know. I don't know. Anyway, so the Chacham disapproved of that. You have the old city of Yerushalayim. South of the Har HaBayis, it's mostly outside the walls of Yerushalayim, you have the area where they have archaeological digs called Ir David. They found there lots and lots of ruins from the times of the first Beis Mikdash. So right next to there is there's a spring with some kind of building constructed over it. Which is apparently the original Gichon spring. And then, like I said, there's also a tunnel over there. You can actually walk through that tunnel where that leads all the way under it. It goes in a circuitous route under Ir David, and it winds up by the Shiloyach spring at the foot of the hill. Yeah.
Yeah. Water in the tunnel.
There's water in the tunnel. Yeah, when you walk in there, you're up to. I did it a few years back. Yeah, you're walking up to your ankles in water, and I think like in some places even up to your knees. Yeah. Anyway, okay. So that was one thing that Chizkiyahu did that the Chacham disapproved of. Another one is Kitzit Dalsis Heichel B'Shigram LaMelech Asher. he cut off the gold doors of the Heichal and sent them as tribute to the king of Ashur, because the Pesukim describe over there, like this Chizkiyahu was officially a vassal of Sanherib, meaning that he has to pay him tribute. He has to pay him a certain amount of tax or tribute or whatever every year. So one time Sanherib threatens, if you don't pay me, then I'm going to come invade Eretz Yisrael. So Chizkiyahu had to raise a huge amount of money all of a sudden. And the Pesuk mentions that he emptied out the treasuries of the palace and the treasury of the Beis Mikdash. So he figured, look, it's a matter of pikuach nefesh, where otherwise Sancheirev is going to invade. And the Chachamim disapproved of it, again, because first of all, he should have had more betochen and Hashem, and second of all, because in the end, it didn't help anyway, Sancheirev invaded it. And the third one was Ibar Nissen b'Nissen. He made an Ibuyor of Nissen in Nissen, which it sounds like it means that after Nissen had begun, he retroactively declared it an Ibuyor. He declared that month, Adosheni, v'loy hoidulay, and the Chachamim disapproved of that. And in fact, you have the Pesukim in Divrei Hayomim that describe, so this is right when Chizkiyahu first became king. He became king at the very end of Adar. So now what happened was we need to get rid of all the Avodah Zarah that's in the Beis Mikdash. Many people are Tomei and they haven't bothered becoming Tohar all the years. We want to be able to have Pesach is in 2 weeks. We want everybody to be Tohar so we can have a massive celebration of Pesach. And with that, we're going to use this as a chance to reaffirm that we're connected to the Eibishter. So therefore, now there's not going to be enough time in 2 weeks for to clean out the Beis Mikdash and for everybody to become Tohar. So he figured in that case, we have to make an Ibuyah. We have to add an extra month and that'll give more time for everything to be arranged. So now we're saying, so on the face of it, we're saying that he did that in Nissan and the Chachamim disapproved of that because he's supposed to do it in Adar. Well, the question becomes, Umi Lesled Chizkiyahu, HaChodesh Hazel Lachem Reish Chadoshim, Zen Nissan Vein Achan Nissan. Doesn't he know the fact that when the Pasuk says this month is the head of months, meaning only this one is Nissan and no other, once it became Nissan, you can't retroactively declare it Adar Sheni. Chizkiyah knows that halacha as well. So the other Chachamim are disagreeing, but why is Chizkiyah? What was he thinking? And the answer is Elatah b'dishmur. The answer is Chizkiyahu's mistake was he didn't know the din that Shmuel said. Now, of course, Shmuel lived 1,000 years later. What we mean is a din that was known in that time, which later on, Shmuel expressed it, and therefore it's called by his name, but the concept was known long before that. Anyway, Shmuel says, you cannot declare an Ibuyor on the 30th of Adar. Adar is normally 29 days, but suppose for whatever reason it's 30 days because Adam didn't show up. You still can't declare an Ibuyor on that day, because that day could have been Rosh Chodesh Nissan. After all, the 30th of any previous month could be the first day of the next month, if it's a Chodesh Chaser. So the 30th of Adar is already Roy to be Nissen, and therefore Shmuel is saying that's already too late to declare an Ibuyor. So Sabar, Hoy over Roy, Layamrin, Chizkiyahu figured, we don't care about this Hoy over Roy. The fact is, it is still Adar. We haven't been Mekadesh, the Chodesh of Nissen yet, and therefore he figured he could get away with it, and the Chachamim were saying no. And in fact, there are several psukim in Divrei Hayomim there when it tells the whole story that describes him making Pesach b'Chodesh Hasheni. Now, on the face of it, that sounds like he means Pesach Sheni. But one explanation of that is, in fact, that the Chachamim, that when Ezra and Nehemiah wrote Sefer Divrei Hayomim, they wrote it in that way to imply that Chizkiyahu was wrong, and in effect, what he did is pushed off Pesach a month, which he shouldn't have done. In fact, the Pesukim there mentioned that Chizkiyahu himself realized eventually that he had acted wrongly and asked Hashem to forgive him and to accept the korbanos of the Jewish people anyway. There is a whole discussion about it in Sanhedrin as well. The Gemara brings another Manda Omer over there that Chizkiyahu's mistake was not making an Ibuyo too late, but rather that you're not supposed to make an Ibuyo Mipnei Atumah. This concept of saying, because the Kohenim are Tomei and the people are Tomei, and therefore we want to bring the Pesach Patara, is not a valid reason to make an Ibuyo, and Chizkiyahu figured that it is. Because Tumah Hotru B'Tzibur, Tumah Tchoye B'Tzibur, as the case may be, right? Continuing on this topic of Chizkiyahu, Amar Rav Yochanan Meshum Rav Yosi, let's go back to Chizkiyahu's tefillah. Amar Rav Yochanan Meshum Rav Yosi ben Zimra. What?
Yeah, we did. Rambam says all the time, Chavtet.
So the Rambam mentions this whole point. The Rambam in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh mentions this whole point, and he mentions the two mistakes, the two different opinions of what Chizkiyahu's mistake was, whether because it was the 30th of Adar, or because you're not supposed to make an Ibuyor Mipnei HaTumah. And the Pasuk mentions, the Pasuk goes on, we just said not in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, it was just Rambam Shlosha Perakim a few days ago. Yeah, that you're not supposed to do it Mipnei HaTumah, because Tumah Tchoyah B'Tzibur, But he did it anyway, and still the pasuk mentions that Chizkiyahu davened, and he said Hashem should accept the korbanos anyway. And sure enough, the pasuk says Vayishma Hashem o Chizkiyahu Vayupar Tzaam. Hashem listened to Chizkiyahu and healed the people, meaning that the korbanos were accepted by Hashem, even though he hadn't done quite right. What? Yeah, the Rambam mentions both points. That he was Makadish on Lamed, that not Makadish, there was Ma'abur on Lamed, as well as that he did it with matrimony. So Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yechon Meshum Rabbi Yosef ben Zimra, Kol HaTorah B'Zchus Atzmoy, if a person davening to Hashem tries to make his tefillah depend on his own zchus, he says, Hashem, please help me because I did such and such. When his tefillah is answered, it will be in somebody else's zchus rather than his own. As we're going to find with Chizkiyahu. But if he makes it depend on somebody else's, then instead Hashem will attribute it to him and Hashem will help him for his own. We, for example, Moshe told him, when Moshe was davening after the Chet Egel, he made it depend on someone else's chus. He didn't say Hashem saved the Yidden for my sake because I did such and such. He said, Shenema Zechor LaAvraham LiYitzchok LiYisrael Avodecha. So he invokes the chus of the others. And Tololoi b'schus atzmai, and Hashem attributed the salvation of the Jewish people to Moshe's own schus. Shenema, you have a pasuk in Tehillim, Vayomer Hashemidem, Hashem's thought that he would destroy them. Lule Moshe b'chiroi omad b'peretz l'fana, b'hoshe chamas m'hashkes. Were it not for Moshe's chosen one who stood in the breach in front of Hashem and turned back Hashem's anger that he shouldn't destroy. So we see that the pasuk is attributing the fact that the Jewish people were saved to Moshe's chus rather than to the others, which Maharsha points out, okay, Moshe is the one davening for them. So of course the pasuk of Tehillim has to mention it, but still could have expressed it something along the idea that if it weren't for Moshe who stood in the breach and invoked the chus of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and that caused the fact that the pasuk of Tehillim doesn't even mention Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, shows that's mainly attributable to Moshe's own chus. On the other hand, Chizkiyah attributed when he was davening on his own zchus. We quoted the pasuk before that he says, Hashem, remember how I walked before you, the emes of Leiv Shalem, and what I did. So therefore, tololoi b'zchus achirim. So when he was saved, when he was cured, then it was and when the city of Yerushalayim was saved from the Sancheirim, it was done. Tololoi b'schus achirim. Then that was done in the schus of others. Shenem v'ganosi ala irazer sloishia. Hashem says, I'll protect the city and save it. L'manu l'man David avdi, for my sake and for the sake of my servant David. So we see he's not saying for your sake because of the mitzvahs you did, but rather for the sake of David. So that was an example. He was Torah b'schus atman. Now, even though we did mention before that according to one man de Omer, we said he invoked the schus of Shlomo HaMelech in plating the whole heichal with silver and gold, one explanation is he didn't actually speak that out. He just expressed that mentally by turning towards the wall. But the actual words of his tefillah, Zechor Neis, Asher Salachti L'fanecha, is that he was invoking his own schus. There's another explanation also. Keep in mind, we were saying there were two things going on over there, Sancheiriv and his own illness, and when he's davening, especially about his own illness, then he's mentioning only schus atzmai, and therefore he's being told that no, it's going to be b'schus achir. V'hainu de'omer b'shur ben Levi, v'hainu de'b'shur ben Levi. This then fits with what Rabbi Shurban Levi says. What does it mean? So after Chizkiyahu was cured, so in Sefer Yeshaya, it has a song of about 10 psukim that Chizkiyahu composed to thank Hashem for his recovery. And he has an expression in there, Hine l'shole mar li mar. Behold, when there's peace, that it's bitter for me, bitter. Now, what's the bitterness? He's saying, I feel the b'shar sheshigur la'akadosh baruch hu shalom. He's saying, even when Hashem sent me a message of peace that I'm going to recover and I'm going to live another 15 years, mar hu lo, it was still bitter for me that I was told that it's not in my own schus. So Maharsha says, the double expression mar, when I was told that there was going to be shalom, that Sancheiriv's army is going to be wiped out, at that point I was sick, so I had one kind of bitterness. And then I'm told that I'm going to recover, but it's not going to be in my own schus, but rather it's going to be because of somebody else's schus, and that's a second level of bitterness. I'm assigning the title.
No salt in the room.
There is an interesting story, by the way, involving the Taz and this pasuk about Laman David Abdi. There's a story where during Gzeres Tachtatat, the Taz and a bunch of Jews from his town were hiding out in a fortress in their town. The fortress had old rusty cannons that hadn't worked in many years, and they don't have B'derech HaTeva any way to defend themselves from the Cossacks. That night, the Taz himself, or maybe somebody else, I don't remember, had a dream where they saw this pasuk that Hashem says, I'll protect the city, Laman Laman David Abdi. The Taz's name is Reb David Segal. So they realize that it means the Eibishter is going to protect them in the course of the Taz, and a Ness happened, all of a sudden these old rusty cannons start working, and they're able to shoot cannonballs with them and scare off the enemies. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Goloch of Tess Tishrei. We know that Rambam says that Mashiach is going to be a king from Beis David, Hoygeba Torah, who involves himself deeply with Torah. So that means that Rebbe says that specifically this yugia, this hard effort in Torah, that's going to make it possible for Mashiach to redeem the Jewish people. Now, when you think about it, you would think Mashiach's main role is as a king. He's a melech from Beis David, but no, we're saying it's the horavanya in Torah that's going to make the difference. Why? Because the Torah is kodma la'olam, and Torah is higher than the world, meaning that it's higher than all the limitations of Golus. That is why we find that Yaakov Avinu, before they even come to Mitzrayim, Yaakov sends Yehuda ahead, Lahodis the fun of Goshen, to set up a base Talmud that they should be Hoygim Batorah, the same expression, because through delving into and through Horoving in Torah, that means that prevents the Golos from having any control over the Jewish people, and therefore we're saying that therefore Mashiach also has to have that in order to undo Golos. Continuing with Halachos of Macholos Asuris, You have to be careful that you don't cook kosher, that you don't cook two pots, one with kosher food and one with shreifa food, one next to the other, if both of them are uncovered. And the same way, if a yid is not at home and a yid is not yotze v'nichnas, you also can't be letting the goyisha hired help cook over there either. Another din, if you have somebody who doesn't have a cheskas kashrus, you can't buy from him anything where there might be a chash of iser, for example, wine or other such things. However, as long as you don't actually know that the guy is choshur, then if you're a guest by him, you are allowed to eat by him. So you have, in other words, a yid usually has a cheskas kashrus, but to go so far as to be able to trust him on a say-so to buy something from him, not, that's why we have the concept of ashgachas on stores and restaurants and whatnot. But if you're a guest by him, then fine. Eidach ad nemen b'yisurin, he has no, in particular, he has no financial stake in feeding you his surin, and then therefore, unless we know that he's choshur, then you don't have a problem. Chananim and Akasha, Matzor, Kodesh, Bachel, Zakas, Israel, the Vichy, Belem, Tamitzvah, Shanema, and Lechobitz, Man, Tzidki, Al, 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 Tzidki, Al,